and welcome to another episode of Lore Council, the podcast from Shield Wall Productions, where we talk about anything and everything background lore and fluff related. And on this episode, we have myself, John.
And Jacob.
And Jacob, what are we doing?
We're doing the Imperial Navy.
In the Navy. I had to.
Yep.
I couldn't make it even a full minute.
I mean, it's pretty hard not to.
They want you! They want you!
Sorry. So, we've done IG, we've done Space Marines, Adeptus Mechanicus. We've been leaving out our friends in the Navy.
Yes.
As, you know,
which
often,
is weird,
yeah.
Because we've got Brad, who's prior Navy.
Though, I will say, for as big as the Navy is in 40K, it is always a more background related item.
Yeah.
They talk about the ships, they talk about, you know,
these cataclysmic huge ship battles, but they really don't go into the nitty gritty.
Which is kind of sad, because who doesn't love a good old, you know, spaceship brawl?
There's interesting things to know about the Imperial Navy.
And there is a lot of, like, just, you know,
stuff
hidden behind all the lore behind them.
Yes. Tell me more, Jacob.
So,
tell me more about the Imperial Navy.
Well, the Imperial Navy, it's kind of first good to understand where it comes from. So, the Imperial Navy was back in the, you know, Great Crusade days of the Imperium of Man, was linked up with the Imperial Guard. It was called the Auxiliary Imperialis.
Or the Solar Auxilia, depending on, chronologically which source you're getting it from. Because currently the Ford books call them the Solar Auxilia, but I guess it depends.
And it's important to note that this formation worked pretty well, because how it worked is you had, you know, Terra, you had Mars producing a lot of ships to prepare for the Great Crusade. And how the force units broke down is you had a lot of cruisers that would carry an entire regiment of Imperial Guard with them.
Yes.
So, you know, whenever you sent a cruiser, you would have an accompaniment regiment of Guard to kind of take and hold the ground that
the legions, the Space Marine legions had taken.
So it was kind of, you know, as well as a force multiplier in addition to the Space Marine legions, you also had, like, a securing an occupational force.
Right.
As you go on, you know, with the Horus Heresy happening and, you know, Mars itself being split, after the Horus Heresy, you had this, you know, dividing factor separating the Imperial Navy from the Imperial Guard. It was actually one of the Emperor's orders before he was entombed on the Golden Throne that, you know, you had to break them off into their own regiments. I think the order he gave was the only people that could, you know, inherit command of the ship were people of the Imperial Navy and not the Imperial Guard. Because the problem you were having is with the Horus Heresy is some, you know, cruisers would stop by a planet and just decide, this is my empire now.
Right.
I have the soldiers to take it, and
no one to stop.
I have a ship.
Yes. That makes them the highest bidder.
Yeah. So, after the Horus Heresy, you get this divide of the Imperial Navy and the Imperial Guard. So, the Imperial Guard are now more or less sent on, like, troop transports or cargo ships.
Right.
Occasionally, they'll go, like, if it's small jump forces with the Imperial Navy, but generally you have your own,
the separation of the two.
Yeah, you have your own faction of the military, which is now your air support, your like
naval
fighter
support.
control, your
interceptors.
Like, yeah.
Yep.
You have your landing forces as well, and you have the whole nine yards, as well as, you know, the Imperial Navy will be used for inquisitorial missions and from basically securing the space between the planets.
Yes.
Because while the Imperial Guard is great at ground troop operations, there's a lot more open space between planets than the planets themselves.
Color me surprised.
Yeah. And, you know, with that, the Imperial Navy has kind of grown into more or less a very similar asset as the Imperial Guard with how their structure is.
Right.
So, the Imperial Navy's structure, let me pull up the list, is more or less the Imperial Guard, but broken down on Navy terms.
Okay. Makes sense enough to me. I mean, they were once one and the same. So it seems to make the most sense that they would retain a similar organizational structure, just rebranding.
Yeah.
To a degree. Why overcomplicate it? If it worked, if the system worked, but just not with that much force behind it, well, just use the same system with less force.
Yeah. The one notable difference is the Imperial Navy is broken down into sectors. So, as you know, the sectors of the Imperium of Man are the Central, or the Segmentum Solar, the North, Segmentum Obscurus, the South, Segmentum Tempestus, the East, Segmentum Ultima, and the West, Segmentum Pacificus.
Yes.
And with each of those, they're each controlled by their own admiral of the Imperial Navy.
Okay.
So you the head of the Navy is the Lord High Admiral of the Navy.
Who resides on Terra, I presume. Yeah, he's one of the High Lords.
Yeah, he resides in Segmentum Solar, and he kind of oversees all of the Lord High Admirals under him.
Okay.
And then under, you know, the Lord High Admirals are kind of the real battle fleet commanders, because they are actually in their segmentum of space, and they kind of know more about what's going on in that segmentum than pretty much anyone else.
Right.
They, you know, they're responsible for talking to their subordinates. It's a lot of statesmanship, but also deciding, you know, where assets go, where resources are getting divvied up to.
Lots of logistics.
Yeah. Under them, you have your Lord Admiral. So Lord Admiral, you have your Solar Admiral. So Solar Admirals are often prospective, you know, sector commanders.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of making their up and up.
Right.
And it's more common that Solar Admirals come into play when there's a war zone or an ongoing conflict in place.
Makes sense.
And then you have your admirals. The admiral is kind of, you know, each segmentum is then broken down further, and admirals control their smaller space in the region.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, like, your vice admirals, and vice admirals command divisions of the entire fleet. So whereas, right, like, the admiral, you know, if the entire fleet needs to get mustered up and sent somewhere, he'd take over, but vice admirals are, they're kind of, like, they'll control the several minders, ships.
Yeah.
You have your rear admiral, which is not really a role that's used anymore, but, you know, if you have a force that's large enough, you need someone to watch your ass.
Right.
And then you have your commodores, and commodores are kind of like the senior captains, and they're like your squad leads.
Sure.
And then you have, you know, your lord captains, which are your captains of flagships. Because it's important to remember, like, in the Navy, whereas in the Imperial Guard, you know, if you have a commander, you know, the commander kind of makes all the decisions.
Right.
With admirals, they're kind of the commander, but on the ship, generally, they'll still have a captain who is, you know, making sure the ship stays running and where it's, and how to plot courses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, the admiral can secede the captain, but the captain still, it's weird, like in maritime law, the captain is still like one of the highest authorities on the ship.
Right.
Like he has a superior, but he's still the captain of his ship.
Right. He has a superior, but he's still got general full autonomy on his own vessel.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maritime law is interesting.
Yes. A little complicated.
Yeah. Like one of the things is you have like part of the reasons captains go down with their ships is in maritime law, if anybody is left on their ship and you got off and they died, you were responsible. It's like manslaughter.
Right.
So you,
on the off chance that someone wasn't able to make it off.
Yeah.
You just keep them company. Go down with them.
Exactly. So that's why, like,
honorable,
unless, like, you know, you've made sure every single person has gotten off, then you can get off last.
Right.
But if you can't, you know, get everyone off, you're going to go, you just decide to go down with your ship.
Mm-hmm. If everyone cannot be possibly accounted for, if there still might be a soul on board, you go with them.
Yep.
As is only right.
And then under Lord Captains, you know, you have your captains, which are generally a little bit aloof and uncompromising, and they're generally pretty across the board. They control everything from the small ships to some of the biggest ships.
Right.
Generally, you'll get Lord Captains more on, like, the flagship battleships and stuff like that. But captains, anything from, I mean, they're not really used in commonly in the 41st millennium, but battle cruisers down to, like, escort ships.
And frigates and such.
Yeah. You have your commander, which is, you know, subordinate officer rank to the captain, controls different aspects of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, you know, your lieutenants and your midshipmen.
Right.
The interesting thing to know is for most of the officer ranks on the ship, they have pretty decent living quarters.
Of course.
So going from, like, you know, captains and down, you know, you have what would kind of look like state's rooms in
small apartment, little living spaces. Yeah.
In like hive cities.
Right.
They're well furnished. You know, they have concubines, stuff like that.
But they're not overly large.
Yeah.
Space is still finite inside a huge
with the exception of the captain.
With the exception of the captain, of course.
Because, you know,
he's the captain.
Yeah. Now, once you go from, like, even the midshipmen down to past that into, like, the warrant officers and stuff like that, that's when it kind of starts to get shitty. You get hot bunking. You get, you know, a lot of fleas and nasty stuff.
But you know what you're not? One of the menials below deck, loading the guns and such.
So, you know, you get your shipmasters, your gun captains, your sergeants, your bosun. And then under that, you get your ratlings and your slavers.
Your menials.
Yeah, those...
The ones who live and die on the ship are born and die on the ship and never, rarely, if ever, see a world outside the ship below decks.
Well, unless you're a voidsman.
True.
Voidsmen don't have a very nice job.
Oh?
I mean, they are the ones that have to put on the void suits and go out and repair...
Yeah, that would... That'd suck.
If there's one thing I don't trust in 40K, it's how airtight.
Right, because just generally, militarily speaking, every piece of kit was made by the lowest bidder, and when that piece of kit is supposed to be a vacuum-sealed, airtight void suit that is protecting you from the ravages of the vacuum of space, well...
Yeah.
The lowest bidder in 40K is a bit more ramshackle for the ordinary human soldier or sailor than it is... In our modern world, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that is to be said, like, even voidsmen and stuff like that, they still have a bit nicer living conditions. Not really flea infested. Flea infested is more for, like, the indentured workers. So, you know, your loaders, your servitors, all the...
Slave menials.
Yeah, your slave menials.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a lot better to enlist... In the Imperial Navy.
Then be drafted.
And then be drafted. Yeah.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, about, like, the Imperial Navy as a whole, you actually have a pretty decent shot at retirement, as opposed to the Imperial Guard.
Yes, that is... that's a low bar, though, Jacob, comparatively.
Though, granted, that is nice, at least.
Sure. Sure.
And their rules for retirement, funny enough, are whatever, you know... planet we pass by, if you're up for retirement, you can
hop off
and
go ashore, as it were,
whether or not it's a shrine world or, you know,
if the place looks nice enough to you,
yeah,
and you're up for retirement, you can retire there,
and you do get pension.
Yes.
And medical.
Yes.
It's I was telling one of my Dark Heresy groups, one of the biggest reasons for 40K, if you're joining the Imperial Guard, it might be just because you need some medical.
Yeah. You won't make a good guardsman if you can barely stand or can't function because you're too sick or sickly or injured or unwell. They need to put you into fighting shape before they can put you into the meat grinder.
Yeah. Now, there's also other roles like pilots and stuff like that. Those are generally not captain of the ship, but like captain rank.
Sure.
Like right above lieutenant.
Right.
And we'll start to talk about those more, but... Overall, like, the picture, it's pretty similar to how the Imperial Guard is, with a couple exceptions.
Right.
I mean, Imperial Guard, it's, as weird as it sounds, like, a little bit more of micromanaging scale, because, you know, you have a lot more commanders, because you generally have...
When you got that many bodies to manage, you gotta do quite a bit more micromanaging on... group levels.
With the exception of, like, a Lord Commander, generally you'll have a lot of commanders on a planet.
Yes.
At any given time.
Indeed.
Now, in space, you have a little bit more autonomy because, you know, if they're sending out a scouting force, they're gonna send, like, maybe a cruiser or a destroyer or something small.
And a couple of escorts.
And, yeah. You'll get escorts occasionally, depending on what's going on. Sometimes the escorts are coming.
But in terms of the Imperial Navy, it's a lot more compartmentalized on a quite literal level.
Yeah.
So there's not as much need for that quite of heavy micromanaging as the Guard.
Yeah. And, I mean, for... And it's also a relatively smaller faction, all things considering, compared to the Guard.
Right.
Because there's only so many bodies you can fit on ships, and only so many ships you can really operate at any one given time.
Yes.
Not to mention ships carry a bit more bang for their buck
than the Guardman or even the Guard Regiment.
Yeah.
Sure, the Guard Regiment can bring the bear, entire armored companies and brutal salvos of las fire and heavy weapons fire, but it is nothing compared to the weaponry on board, even the smallest Imperial Navy vessel.
Even, like, an Imperial, escort, like a sloop or a sloop, I think, swoop? There we go, swoop.
Sloop, you had it right the first time.
Alrighty, whatever.
Right.
But, as long as it has a slot for a laser and a torpedo tube, it can exterminate a planet.
Yes, not quite as thoroughly or bombastically as its larger counterparts, but it can still get the job done.
I mean, you fire a virus bomb.
Yeah, that's true.
You only need a small torpedo for loading up a virus bomb. It might take a little bit longer for the virus to spread.
Right, in which case you require, to fire a couple of more viral torpedoes and not such. Or cyclonic torpedoes, depending on the nature of the exterminatus being done.
I think cyclonic torpedoes generally are a bit larger.
Right, okay, yeah. Right. Yes.
Because, on the notes of tech,
an ordnance.
Yeah.
Everyone's favorite topic in 40K.
So we'll break it down first. Some of the largest guns you get on any ships are the macro.
Yes.
Macro cannons.
Yes.
So there's two different classes. There's macro cannons, and then there's light macro cannons, or smaller macro cannons. Mm-hmm. And the lore behind the macro cannon itself, the diameter of the shell is... Well, they say a Lehman Russ tank can fit in the barrel of a macro cannon.
I believe it.
Which is fucking massive.
Fuck huge.
Yeah.
For a gun.
That's... Like, macro cannons generally don't even have explosive ordnance inside of them.
Because they don't need to.
Because the amount of kinetic energy behind it.
Behind that solid mass, you don't need explosive ordnance on the other end of it.
You are looking at, 50 megatons if you're shooting at a planet from orbit. From just raw kinetic force.
Of something that fucking huge making impact.
Now, a lot of people are like, 40K, why do you still use conventional weapons in space? Why not just use lasers like Star Wars? Well, it's interesting to note about that. So, with the way shielding works in 40K, and this is why, a lot of times you see Space Marines using close combat weapons instead of bolters, is a lot of the shielding is, warp-based. It derives some power from the warp.
Or energy-based or some such.
Yeah. And the way they've discussed it in 40K is energy weapons can't really go through shields.
They're very good at absorbing shields in 40K. Shielding technology is great at absorbing non-solid energy weapons. So your lasers, your plasmas, whatever.
Yeah.
But you throw a raw chunk of something solid,
it's a lot more likely to go through that shield.
Right, because it's still got the raw momentum of something fuck huge and solid going into it, and there's not a whole lot of ways to disperse that.
Yeah.
And even if you do, you still got the kinetic force behind it, and you can't really anchor yourself in space.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't necessarily break the shields, which it usually does anyway, it's still going to knock you way the fuck off course in a big fucking way.
Mm-hmm. And, when, the shells you're firing are sometimes as big as, the hull of some of the smaller ships you're fighting.
Right.
You're cutting through that.
Yeah, you're tearing them in half. Quite easily.
And you don't have to get direct hits. I mean, glancing blows from a macro shell is...
Right.
It's a lot more than...
It's like, Muhammad Ali didn't get a full-on sucker punch to my nose. He just, glanced my jaw a little bit while I'm still going down, because that's still Muhammad Ali glancing my jaw with a haymaker.
And it's important to remember, too, that energy weapons, they're great. They can melt things, they can, destroy. But at the end of the day, if you're melting through a hull, you can still, sometimes only destroy a compartment or still seal that compartment once you're done from the pure heat of melting the metal.
Right. And the
A macro cannon, it just rips and tears through.
Right. You know, energy weapons will cauterize and your target can still manage to limp away
yeah.
if you didn't land a telling enough blow deeper into the hull. But you hit him with a macro cannon, you're ripping the dumb thing in half.
Yeah. It's like the difference between bolters or laser weapons. Like, laser weapons, if you say someone got shot by a las cannon in the leg, their leg's gone, it's cauterized, though.
Right. You know, there's nothing to do about the leg, but, you know, they have greater odds of living because there's not bleeding.
But if you get a hit with a bolter shell to the leg, you end up like the guardsman in my campaign who bled out, you know.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
And shit, on a load of bolter rounds, just because by the nature of what they are and their mass reactive, they explode. Like, even if it were for the mass reactive explode, like, it's still larger than our modern-day 50 caliber rounds. There are no wounding shots with those. It doesn't matter where you get hit, the kinetic force just impacting your body anywhere is taking you down.
Mm-hmm.
You had an explosion on the other end of that to a much larger round. It doesn't matter where you get hit. You're done just from the kinetic force around you hitting you.
Now, the interesting thing I do have to give props to, like, Games Workshop for is, I mean, you know, ballistic weapons in space are still very useful for the sole reason they never slow down.
No.
They are fired with a certain acceleration, and mm-hmm. they will continue to gain acceleration as they go forward.
Until they meet some sort of solid resistance.
You know, an object at rest will stay at rest.
An object in motion will continue in motion until met with equal or opposite force.
Exactly. So
energy weapons, they'll peter out. They'll run out of juice a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, they can only maintain that sort of energy for a certain distance after firing.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a solid shot macro cannon going. Well, if you miss, someone somewhere at some point in time might have a horrible day and not even know why.
Insert that Mass Effect sergeant screaming at soldiers, you know, your bullet's going to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be interesting because I know it's happened at some point in 40K. Someone's fired a macro cannon shell and it didn't hit the target. And then like 400 years later,
hit something completely unrelated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just minding their own business.
What the fuck was that?
Right. And, you know, probably like, you know, supply convoy, merchant convoy, or even another, you know, military group. They get one of their ships just disintegrates. What the hell is that? I don't know. We're under attack. Everyone goes to battle stations and just start firing blindly into the void because they think, reasonably, maybe under attack by Eldar pirates who have cloaking technology ones or some sudden. They're just firing even more of those solid shots out into the void, causing more chaos hundreds of years into the future. Or, you know, some world out in the backwater mining its own fucking business.
Just gets hit with a nuke.
Gets hit with a fucking macro cannon out of nowhere. Kill shot on the one hive city on that backwater. And they have no idea why. There's no chance to call for help. No warning, nothing. Just at one point, a planet goes dark, and no one knows why. Planet goes dark, and honestly, no one notices.
Yeah. Now, the next is, they still do have laser weapons.
Of course.
Turbo lasers.
Yes.
Big 3-beam lasers that love to annihilate shit.
Right.
Now, that's... They're generally employed in large batteries of lasers. So when you have macro cannons on your ship, if they're light macro cannons, they'll generally be turrets on top of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
If they're macro cannons, it will generally be the hull of the ship. So if you look, they kind of look like modern Navy vessels. They have a pointed prow,
mm-hmm.
then they have a flat midsection, and then the rear section of the ship is like, you know, you have your command bridge, you have your... You know, your church spires and stuff.
And sat worryingly behind that are their drive engines.
Yeah. And, you know, with, you know, turbo lasers, they can be a little bit more, I guess, easily maneuvered than, you know, the macro cannons themselves. Because the macro cannons, they have a very small traverse angle.
Right.
Them being so massive and...
They can't afford to have too much range because they still need some sort of structural stability to brace for the shot.
Yeah.
Space notwithstanding, physics is still physics.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing this isn't lore on their side, but I'm guessing much like real life. Funny enough, when ships in real life fire their batteries,
they scoot a little bit in the water.
They do. But what they'll do is they won't fire all their batteries because some ships, if they fire all their batteries, they'll flip over.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is they'll fire, you know, the first battery at the front of the ship and then the last battery at the rear of the ship. They'll fire those. and then they'll fire the next ones, and if they have another set of turrets, they'll fire those.
Right.
That way, you know, it doesn't turn the ship out of angle or anything right. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing they probably have to do some wonky stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
Considering the amount of
considering that
energy.
Zero gravity provides a lot less resistance to being knocked off course than water.
Yeah. I think Battlefleet Gothic Armada, you actually had mini thrusters that fired.
Yes, the video specifically.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Which, it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So turbo lasers, those, you know, they're generally used in tandem or to take out smaller ships.
Right.
So macro cannons are great, but with such giant shells, you have a hard time hitting smaller targets.
Right.
So your turbo lasers, it's just kind of point and click and...
Right. They are
melted.
Laser precise.
Yep. And then, you know, you have your smaller macro cannon batteries on top, and then below that, you have, like, your torpedo tubes.
Yes.
So, torpedo tubes are pretty neat. I mean, the fact that they still use torpedo-based weapons is kind of cool in the 41st millennia.
And when you think about it for a moment, it makes perfect sense. I mean, if the macro cannons are so effective,
yeah.
because they got the raw kinetic force, they saw it, boom, if you add torpedoes into them, they would have their own propulsion behind them.
Yeah.
Great for cracking through shields.
Yep. Not to mention, you know, you can fire those, and they just kind of keep traveling in the same direction.
Fire them on a prediction grid to deny your enemy maneuvering space.
Yeah.
Because they're not as quick, as fast moving as your macro cannon shots or your other ordnance, but it can deny the enemy space to move in a certain sector.
Yeah.
Certain grid coordinates. Now, granted, there is the three-dimensional aspect of space, so you know. But still, the more you can narrow your enemy's ability to maneuver space naval conflict, the better, because you can keep a better eye on them.
Now, the thing about ranging in 40K as well. In a lot of other sci-fi universes, you have space combat taking place in a pretty close area.
Right.
In 40K, you are looking at thousands upon thousands of kilometers.
Mm-hmm. It is very rare that you're going up for a close run broadside.
Yeah.
That is when things have gone particularly sideways and in the fan splattery.
Now, smaller escort ships and stuff, they will go a bit closer because that's kind of their job. They're
right.
harassers. They'll,
right.
And that's where you'll see, like, a lot of torpedoes hitting and doing damage and instead of being, like, of a more blocking strategy. Because
yeah,
they can run
there.
Up, they can fire their torpedoes and run off.
Mm-hmm, and the enemy won't have time to maneuver out of the way.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, about 40K ships as a whole for the Imperium, they still use a lot of ramming.
Yes.
And the reason this is important, people are like, oh, but, you know, why would you ram your ship? Now, I was looking into this topic a little bit. One of the interesting thing about void shields is how they, what happens when, you know, one void shield touches another void shield. Now, the thing about why ramming is so prevalent and so effective in 40K is when you ram one void shield into another, it starts to create like a void grenade.
Right.
Or a void bomb in this case.
Mm.
And as long as your shields can hold longer than theirs,
you fry them out.
You fry them out, and then a small, like, void bomb will open up and just shred their ship.
Yes, a void shield feedback loop.
Yeah. And the Imperial ships, up to cruisers, you get heavily armored prows specific
yep.
for ramming.
Specifically designed to overload and pop the enemy void shields at minimal, with more minimal risk because you're presenting a much more narrow target on the ramming course than you would be for engaging in broadsides and what have you.
You also get giant power lances
yes.
on the front of their ships.
That's chase guns.
Yeah. And also used for ramming, too.
Yeah. Yep. It's often, you know, soften up those void shields just an extra bit more to make sure that yours lasts just that much longer that they need to.
Now, as well, you have different, you know, I guess air-to-ground or space-to-ground weapons to support your troops with. Of course, you
interceptors.
Well, I'm more talking about the weaponry.
On the planetary side.
So, I mean, you still have your macro cannons, your turbo lasers, but you also have your torpedoes, which is a lot of the really tactical usefulness of the torpedoes themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You have a couple different, like, exterminatus devices. So
we mentioned virus bomb.
Virus bomb. So
crowd
virus
favorite.
Yeah. And for all those viewers who don't know, virus bombs. It releases a virus that basically eats any organic material on the surface of the planet, making highly flammable gas.
Yes.
And then it's ignited with a turbo laser.
And it doesn't take more than one shot from a turbo laser to ignite that very volatile after product.
Yeah.
Now, instead, it eats and consumes all organic matter of any kind. And it ain't particularly merciful on how it does. It's quite horrific. It melts anything organic rather instantaneously. It is, well, grimdark.
Yeah.
And that's why it's crowd favorite. It is so fucking over the top, holy shit, brutal.
And even Space Marines can't survive it.
No, not even in their fully sealed armor. They still have to take cover.
Yeah.
The only things that can really have a chance are completely undamaged Dreadnought sarcophagi. At least the Horus Heresy standard ones.
Yeah.
But other than that, they just can't.
Yeah. And then there's also cyclonic torpedoes.
Yes.
Which, they work like a meltabomb. They have a massive melta charge, and it's a two-stage charge. They have the first charge for when it impacts the planet. So when it impacts the planet, it's like a mini nuke going off.
Because
that mini nuke of melta slams that secondary charge to the core of the planet, where it has another larger melta charge, which blows up in the core of the planet, cracking the planet. Yeah. It's why, I think it was one of the Dawn of War games where you see the Meltabomb coming in, and it's, you know, it's like a mini blast wave, and
right.
then there's a secondary blast wave, and a couple seconds later, the planet just starts to crack open.
That's a good way to kill a planet.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Yep. And it's interesting to see what, like, anytime someone, you know, a Star Wars fan says, you know, brings up, you know, Star Wars ships could beat 40K ships. I always mention that even the smallest of our ships have the ability to destroy planets.
Right, whereas
you need a Death Star.
And it's special because it can destroy planets.
Yeah.
In a single shot. Yeah, sure, there is, I think recall, you know, Star Destroyers can, you know, glass a planet en masse in mass volleys, but
it takes months.
Right, whereas 40K ships, just one can do the job with just a single torpedo.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're really not, you know, if you really can't do it with a torpedo, you do it with a torpedo and a laser.
Yeah.
If you still want the planet, but just want anything on there to get the fuck off and die.
Right.
Then you use the virus bomb.
Yes.
Now, on that topic, 40K ships are especially large.
They are fucking huge.
So,
they are measured in kilometers.
Yeah. So, with the ships overall, lore's been retconned a couple times and taken back. The older lore had them a lot larger, and then they've changed the size to a bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, for battleships, you're looking at anywhere between, like, 8 to 20 kilometers with a crew of, like, a couple hundred thousand to 3 million.
Yes.
I tend to agree more on the larger scale from, like, the depiction and, like, Battlefleet Gothic, both
sure.
board game and the video game.
Mm-hmm.
Battleships, I think the last article I read was, like, 16 kilometers and 3 million crew.
Sounds about right.
Which is a fucking lot of people.
Yes. Yes, it is, Jacob.
When compared to, like, the largest Star Destroyers, they had one special Star Destroyer. I forget the name of it. It was, like, 11 kilometers long.
Right.
Most,
nothing to sniff at.
Nothing to sniff at, but that's, like, the largest.
That's what made it special.
Yeah.
In Star Wars. In 40K, that is.
That is your
standard.
Typical battleship.
That is standard battleship of the line.
You're
that's most, not special.
Yeah. Most other Star Destroyers are about a kilometer long.
Yes. And in 40K, they get bigger than battleships.
Yeah.
You know, we talk Space Marine cruisers, grand cruisers, flagships. When you get into that territory, the numbers get, well, they get 40K huge.
Yeah.
Like, you think that battleship is huge, you think that's standard ship of the line territory. We're not talking things that are the Tirpitz or, what's it, Yamato?
Yeah.
Size, comparatively.
Those things
goodness,
are dwarfed.
They're, I mean, just like, in terms of 40K scale, they're equivalent of the Tirpitz of the Yamato. Holy shit.
So, the 40K ships are broken down into categories.
Yes.
There's the battleship, then this is a retired class from, like, the Great Crusade, but you had your heavy cruisers, or I like to call them battle cruisers.
Yes.
And then you have your cruisers, and then your escort ships, which are your destroyers, your frigates, your swoops, stuff like that.
Yes.
Light cruisers as well.
Right.
But to kind of go down the list, you, at the very top, you have your, you know, your battleships.
Your battleships and your grand cruisers.
Yeah. Battleships, like the largest battleships, are the Imperator class.
Yes, everything is.
It's the Emperor class. From there, you have your Apocalypse class, your Nemesis class.
Yes.
Your Retribution, Victory, Vanquisher. Now, each of these have their own armament and special weapons, because they're kind of unique to the Forge worlds they come from.
Right.
As typically, like, the super heavy weapons of the Forge worlds are, they have their own little flair.
Sure.
I think the Emperor class has, like, more macro cannons, and the Apocalypse class carries more, like, more torpedo tubes and turbo lasers, so it all depends.
Right.
Below that, you have your, like, battle cruisers, which don't really exist anymore ever since the, you know, Horus Heresy. They're kind of retconned a bit.
Retconned a little bit. It's mostly they are the domain of space marine fleets. They're not the Imperial Navy. They are the domain of space marines.
Now, the interesting thing about, like, battle cruisers and their role is they're a bit more maneuverable and faster than your typical battleships.
Yes.
But they're still, they pack just about as much of a punch as one. They're just not generally as heavily armored.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, from, like, the Rogue Trader days as well, you have, like, galleons. Yeah. Conqueror class Star Galleon. And it looks like the derpy Rogue Trader ships.
Sure.
That's
why we love them.
But under that, you have probably the most prevalent and used class out of all the Imperial Navy, which is your cruiser class.
Yes.
And then you also have your grand cruisers, which are generally for, like, commanders and stuff like that.
Right.
But, like the other ones, you have, you know, your Mars class cruisers, your Overlord class cruisers, and, you know, each Forge World and each, like, shipyard has their own class, and it's pretty similar to what their battleship counterparts are as well. Interestingly enough, there's only a couple, like, Forge Worlds that can produce Emperor-class battleships. And that's why most of them are either produced on Terra or Mars.
Right.
Because they're the only ones that literally have the rigging big enough to build a ship of that huge size.
Yep. And they don't make them very often.
Yeah. Also, with the battle cruisers, a lot of them kind of went into the Rogue Trader territory of current use.
Yes.
Below that, I mean, you have your light cruisers, which are your faster scouting forces.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your frigates, which are escort ships. The smallest warp-capable ship, interestingly enough, is a swoop. And those are still about 0.8 kilometers long, which is about half a mile. And their minimum crew is 3,000.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more in terms of size that we in the real world can comprehend.
Yeah.
But still.
But, I mean, even for that size, like, that for that being the smallest warp-capable ship, it's pretty interesting. You also have corvettes. Actually, I think that's where, like, the swoops fall into play. They're the Claymore-class corvette. They are as tiny as you can get, but still pretty fucking large.
Right.
You also have your destroyers, which typically destroyers play an interesting role of kind of like interceptor chasing down things. And,
yes.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Under that, you also have your attack craft. So there's a couple different types of attack craft. One of the things that sets the Emperor class battleship apart from the other ones is it plays a little bit of a carrier role.
Right.
So it doesn't have quite as many macro cannons as, like, the Apocalypse class, but it does have launcher bays, which are more or less macro cannons that shoot flyers.
Right. And all of larger ships have some degree of interceptor fighter contingent, but the Emperor class has the largest thereof.
Yeah. And also, like, there's very few dedicated, like, carriers in 40K.
Right.
It's, like, attack crafts are generally a secondary to that.
Yes.
You have a couple different types of attack craft. You have your interceptors, which are your fighter planes. You have your Starhawk bombers, which are, your bombers.
Yes.
And then you have your shark assault boats, which carry your troops over to the other ship to try to get a foothold.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I gotta take, you know, I gotta give GW credit for keeping, like, assault troops, like, for boarding actions.
Boarding parties, yeah.
Because, I mean, I feel like that's one thing that Star Wars just doesn't do quite as much. Like, you'll see occasionally they'll go in, I mean,
they'll do a boarding party here and there, but they don't do it en masse for the sole purpose of taking control of the entire ship. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's one thing to remember is, I mean, if you get the possibility, you can sometimes, with through, like, tech assists and stuff, take back ships that might have, like, recently converted to Chaos, or... Mm-hmm. And ships are expensive and old. Most of the ships in 40K are Horus Heresy age, like, yep, 10,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to keep your ships. And anytime you lose a ship, that is gone.
Yeah.
Like, the tech priests very rarely even know how the ship was made.
Right.
They just try to appease the machine spirit of the ship to keep it running.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of crazy to think about when, like, you have a somewhat limited number of these ships because some ships you just can't remake.
Mm-hmm.
They have technical systems that we can't even begin to comprehend.
Right, that just can't be replicated anymore because the knowledge of that technology has been lost in the 10,000 years since the Horus Heresy.
It's kind of like the Imperator class, like Titans.
Right. There will never be any more of them than there are.
Yeah.
They just can't make them anymore.
And... Also, like, I kind of left it out, but there are other transport ships. They kind of fall into, like, the light cruiser to cruiser, maybe cruiser size, depending on how big the transport is.
Yeah.
But they're basically flying box trucks.
Right.
They are shaped like, the most they ever have is maybe a couple, like, macro cannons, and that's
right.
Pretty much
their
it.
Function is not combat. It is...
Yeah.
Well, fuck you, school bus.
True. I do kind of like the look of them because they look the most transporty of all transport ships.
Right.
Yeah. But overall, like, the Imperial Navy fills an interesting role in the Imperium of Man because they have a little bit more autonomy from the other factions. When the Inquisition takes them over, they still have to be pretty cordial to ship captains.
Right, because it is their vessel. They still, technically, even though they're Inquisition, they still have to abide by Maitre Lama and request permission to board.
Yeah.
Even Primarchs have to request permission from a captain to board if they wish to do so.
Mm-hmm.
They typically don't, because it is just assumed that they are given permission to board. But again, my favorite ship story comes from the Flight of the Eisenstein book, where Garrow has just escaped the atrocity of Isfahan 3. Is dead in the water, jettisons the warp drives to just as a beacon to anyone nearby that might be friendly. Dorne's phalanx shows up, a bunch of Terminators teleport on board, and demand that the Death Guard and everyone in the center of the hold lay down their weapons, and Garrow has finally had the fucking enough. And he's like, no, you lay down your arms, you're on my ship without my permission, and I am the captain here, you will lay down your arms now. And from the back of this Terminator contingent, my apologies, Captain. Permission to come aboard. Rogel Dorn abides by maritime law.
Yeah.
And asks for permission from a bog-standard legionary captain. Because them's the rules.
It's...
I just think that's so fucking cool.
It's fucking awesome. It's like that...
And then, like, 3 pages later, Cole cocks him across the jaw.
It always reminds me of that scene from Band of Brothers Pacific. There's the lieutenant at the firing range.
Mm.
And he you know, doesn't check his weapons barrel, and he sweeps some people.
Right.
And the gunnery sergeant
picks up a fistful of ammunition. He's like, you dumb fuck!
And throws it at him, starts berating him.
And the guy looks at his commanding officer, he's like, don't look at me, he's right.
Because, funny enough, like, there are a few times where subordinates will outrank, you know, superiors. Like, mm-hmm. on a firing range in the army.
Yeah, just some private, he looks, the gun he's going off, and he looks at the skipper, and he's like, don't look at me, he's
like,
right.
He was the lieutenant of the squad. He outranks the gunny at the firing range. But mm-hmm. at the firing range, the gunny has full authority to do whatever he wants, mm-hmm. as long as he's within
mm-hmm.
his, like, realm of operation. And it's the same
and
thing.
And he just pointed a, you know, potentially hot weapon at a bunch of friendlies, and he's like, you dumb fuck, you do that piece, you do that again, I'll shove that piece so far your fucking ass.
Yeah.
He's like, Skipper, you're gonna do like, don't look at me, he's right.
And interestingly enough, too, besides, like, the ships themselves, there are, like, battle stations that hover over planets.
Right,
and
orbital stations.
Orbital stations.
Planetary defense stations.
Which kind of rival the scale of Star Destroyer. I know, like, the Blackstone fortresses themselves are larger than they are in...
Yes, yes. Now, and there is one more class of starship that we haven't touched on, which are the Star Fortresses.
Yeah.
And which, speaking of Drogildorn, the best known of which was Drogildorn's flagship, quote-unquote, called the Phalanx, which is a massive Star Fortress. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes anything fuck huge in the Death Star, in the Star Wars universe, look adorable.
Yeah.
These things are fucking massive.
It's more or less where the Emperor-class ships have to dock to get fuel.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, this is a substantially sized floating planet.
Yeah.
In terms of raw scale.
And they are armed just as well.
There's not a whole lot that can take them down.
No.
Not when they've got their full contingent of escort and fleet around them.
I mean, you have entire Black Crusades trying to take them over.
Just take one.
Yeah, yep. Like the Blackstone Fortress is the entire, I think it was 13th Black Crusade, was to try to take over the Star Fortress.
I believe that'd be the 12th.
The 12th, oh god.
11th or 12th, yeah, because the 13th is the one that just broke Cadia.
So. Yeah, okay, so it was the 12th.
It was one of the other ones.
But yeah, that... They're fucking massive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I remember correctly, the Blackstone Fortresses were alien constructed, and the Imperium's like, we're gonna make that Imperial.
Yes. And indeed that did.
Yeah. Hey, if you put enough skulls and Aquilas on anything, it becomes...
It's Imperial.
Yeah.
And to sanctify it appropriately.
The Imperium of Man is kind of like that dog that walks by and then pisses on your fire hydrant. That fire hydrant...
This belongs to me now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the question isn't who's going to let him, Jacob.
It's who's going to
stop him. Yep.
And, fuck, I mean, there's quite a bit on the Imperial Navy overall. I mean, for a faction that doesn't have a whole lot of highlights in and of itself, there is a lot of lore because a lot of the Imperial Navy kind of, you know, ties...
They don't
everything.
Get a lot of screen time, but they're literally the driving force and what keeps the Imperium afloat.
I love the fact, though, that it's the Navy and not, like, the space, like, legions or... They still named it the Navy, which I always love in sci-fi that it's still referred to as the Navy. It's like, we don't have, you know, ships anymore because we don't really need them when we have flying shit, but we're gonna keep the Navy around.
Right. I'm sure it's done deliberately as a, relatable touchstone.
Yeah, it's easier to relate to.
Yeah, and understand what function it serves in the wider Imperium as a whole in the galaxy and such and some such.
Yeah.
But,
and with, I mean, we were going to touch on this just a tiny bit.
Very
but,
briefly.
With,
good news, everyone!
With the new Battlefleet Gothic having been, you know, verified by GW, hopefully we'll get to play some Battlefleet Gothic 2 on tabletop.
Yes.
I'm excited for that re-release.
Yep.
It's been over 10 years now.
Yeah, and people have been speculating whether or not they'd be, you know, what kind of these old, which one of those old specialist games they were going to be bringing back next. Because, you know, they did revamp of Blood Bowl, and they've done, you know, re-releases of Space Hulk a lot.
And Kill Team.
The new release of Kill Team's awesome. And people were wondering, you know, so does that mean Battlefleet Gothic might be up next? And apparently, it's on the docket.
Yeah.
So, good news, everyone, indeed.
Yep.
But, on that exciting note, that about do it?
There was one thing I wanted to touch on, too, is the navigation.
Right, so...
Yeah, we kind of...
Yes, we talked about the ships themselves. Now, how do they traverse the stars? Well, listeners, Star Wars has got faster-than-light travel. Star Trek's got wormholes and such. Well, 40K, because it's 40K, they go well. Warp travel. Now,
they have a navigator.
This is no easy task. They are guided through warp by these beings called navigators, which are able to guide and traverse the warp by using their third navigator's eye in the center of their forehead.
They sit in basically big metal eggs.
That are insulated from the rest of the ship.
Yeah.
That let them see around the ship, through it, with their third eye. Because that third eye is very potent, and when used to gaze upon the mortals, it is just a straight weapon.
Yeah.
In the book The Battle of the Fang, a navigator uses her third eye to obliterate a Rubik Marine.
Wow.
Yep. without even trying, like, she literally just opens and just looks at it and just, because it's just raw warp stuff being focused as an energy, as a beam.
Yeah.
So they encapsulate themselves in this egg. The Geller fields, which protect the ship and its inhabitants from the ravages of the warp, the place where all nasty demons and chaos entities abide, or make their homes, slip into the warp. They create a tear in real space and slide, you know, not a small one either, huge tears in real space that entire fleets can slip into, and then guide by the guiding, shining light of the Astronomicon, the holy light of the Emperor himself.
Funny enough, the Astro Telepathica is, they can still receive messages from the Emperor.
Yes.
They're generally pretty cryptic, like...
Yes.
But they're the only ones of the Imperial Psykers that have a direct connection to
that
the Emperor. Yeah,
that have a direct line with the Batphone, yeah.
Because the Emperor, more or less, the Golden Throne is the beacon that shows them where they shouldn't crash
into. It's a cosmic lighthouse.
Yeah.
And now there are other beacons, smaller warp beacons placed throughout the galaxy for these of navigation when they're closer to that, and as waypoints and markers and what have you. But they basically go literally through hell.
Yeah.
From one point to another, and it's not so much that it is a shortcut through space and through space as it is a jump through space and time. So you could leave at a chronological set marker on your ship's count and arrive either generally on schedule, give or take a few days or hours, or a couple weeks ahead of schedule, or years behind schedule.
Yeah.
Or just fucking vanish for what may only seem, you know, it may seem like the, you know,
a couple months.
It may seem like what was supposed to be the, you know, estimated travel time, and you get there, and it's been 100 years.
Yeah.
Been 100 years.
And part of the reason those eggs themselves are insulated is because if the Geller fields do flicker or go off, they still have to guide the ship back to real space.
Yes.
And that, it basically is armored enough to allow them to do that.
Right, very quickly.
Yeah.
But yes. Warp travel, space travel in the 41st millennium is just as grim, dark, and brutal as everything else.
And you better hope those Geller fields don't flicker, because if they flicker...
Even for a moment. It's yes, they will, the demons will, you know, only be able to get in for a moment. But that's just all the time they need, because they'll be able to manifest. They'll have a, you know, split second to manifest and get into the ship. But once they're there, they'll still have enough energy to wreak some havoc before they poof out.
And that's part of the thing, too, is... Like, they will leave behind warp dust and stuff like that, too, which a lot of times they just have to straight up cut out sections of the hull.
Yep.
If they've been tainted.
Because
warp stuff, if you don't know, it makes you trip pretty fucking hard.
And opens you up to being a door to things in the warp, even when you're back in the real space.
Yep. But, you know, I wanted to touch on that because I realized we hadn't even touched on how they navigate or fly.
Right, and that is, I mean, that's pretty much all there is to say on it. Yeah. Really. It is not fun.
No.
Another thing about going into the warp is you cannot look upon the warp with unshielded.
No, they put down metal shutters.
Blast shutters across all portholes and viewing ports. The only beings who've been able to do so, look upon the warp and not go completely mad, are...
The Sisters of Silence.
And Primarchs.
Yep. And Sisters of Silence are fun. They don't even need Geller fields, because their ship is a Geller field at that point.
Pretty much, yes. They are psychic blanks. They are pariahs. They are the antithesis of all warp entities that make them go...
If Psykers are plus one, Sisters of Silence are negative one.
Yes. They are polar opposites, and they are not like magnets. They do not click together.
No.
It's like putting the two same magnetic polarities, trying to stick those together. You know, north and south, north and north magnetic pole. Those don't work.
Nope.
Like oil and water, too. Anyway, that is warp travel and the Imperial Navy.
In a nutshell.
In a very big nutshell. But, so that'll about do it, then.
Yep.
So, dear listeners, hopefully we have properly educated you on all things naval and nautical in the 41st millennium. And if you've got any suggestions or requests for future Lore Council topics or for our other podcasts of general nerd sense or loose sprues, head on over to our Facebook page, Shield Wolf Productions, on Facebook.com. Oh!
Or hit us up on Twitter at the official SWP, whether or not you want to talk about the Imperial Navy or bring me any fun Battlefleet Gothic Armada stories you've had from the tabletop. Or just want to shoot the shit and talk, I'm more than happy to do that as well.
And wherever you're listening to us, you'll be at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever. Don't forget to subscribe if you are not subscribed already. And until next time, dear shield bearers, we shall see you another day. Doodles!